Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Who doesn't love shopping at Target? Did you know the all-new Target Circle is the free and easy way to get the most deals at Target? And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day. But wait, there's more. Now you've got a new way to save with Target Circle 360. With unlimited same-day delivery, Target Circle 360 is the fastest way to get your order to your door or someone else's. Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for your first year of membership. That's $50 off the regular price. Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same-day delivery is subject to terms, applies to orders over $35. For a 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in store or at target.com/circle card.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am all in.
I am all in with Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Scott Patterson. This is I Am All In podcast. We are going to recap episode 6, season 1 of Rory's birthday parties. Not party, parties. She had more than one. And listen, if I could just take a moment to discuss this Max Medina ranting that I've been doing. We did a special episode with Scott, who is a lovely, lovely human being, on top of being one of the better jazz piano players of anybody, much less actors. But he can play a mean jazz piano, this guy. Just a lovely, lovely guy, terrific actor. So it was never personal against Scott. It's just the character. That's what I'm responding to. So, we had a nice discussion on, we made a special podcast out of it, and I feel a lot better about it. I do. He said that he was willing to walk away from his job at Chilton. For Lorelei. I respect that. I respect his perspective on that. I respect the choices that he made. I still want to throttle him because he's a rival. That's not going to go away. That's always going to be there. I'm serious about that, man. There's something that, it's the Scotch-Irish in me on my dad's side. It just rises up. And he invokes that. And so, but I got to say, man, I mean, if you're in love with somebody, I can kind of dig where he's coming from. It was all about romance. He was willing to throw it all away, but I still have a bone to pick with him. I got to tell you, I'm going to be watching these episodes, and he better be real careful, Max Medina. I'm warning you.
You got a little break from Max in this episode.
I did. I got a little break. So let's talk about Rory's birthday parties, because it's my God, we're going to unpack one heck of a show. This so far has been my favorite episode.
I mean, it is so filled with conflict and so filled with so many great lines. I don't know how we're going to pick a great line, but there are a million great lines in this episode. You know, the thing that really struck me about this episode, and I think you guys will agree with me, is the level of vitriol between mother and daughter. I mean, mm-hmm. between Emily and Laura. I mean, it's like, and it's almost like, I don't know how Emily tolerated Lorelai, even from the get-go, from the very first scene. You know, my daughter, Henny Youngman, everything's a joke. Everything's this. Mm-hmm. I mean, all she's trying to do is, you know, I think Richard and Emily got together a long, long time ago and have for years have sort of shrugged their shoulders and acknowledged that Lorelai's a lost cause, that she's never going to be pleasant company. She's never going to be a loving daughter to them. But Rory, they can work on Rory. They can get it right with her. So everything they did wrong, maybe, or apply the same kind of discipline or the same kind of cultural opportunities from their perspective. For Rory, I think they feel like they're going to save her life.
I understand, though, why Emily makes Lorelai crazy. So I get what you're saying, but on the same token, it's like, Emily is tough.
She's tough as nails.
She does a lot of things for herself, and it drives Lorelai nutty.
But here's the thing that watching this episode, watching just the first couple of scenes, I started asking questions. Where is Emily from? What was her mother like? What was mm-hmm. her grandmother like? Mm-hmm. What is that bloodline like mm-hmm. for her for them to produce an Emily Gilmore, where it was just, it's a perfectionist. It's about manners. It's about appearance. It's about education. Mm-hmm. It's about wealth. It's about being elite. It's about maintaining culture. It's about protecting culture. It's about protecting education. It's about donating to Harvard, donating to this, private schools, this, that. It's about culture, keeping culture. And that's a responsibility. So I started wondering where Emily came from. And I thought one scenario, here's a possible scenario. Emily's bloodline came from nothing.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
what I think.
And somebody, right? And somebody made a decision a couple hundred years ago, a woman who said, enough is enough and education's the key. And I'm going to crack the whip on all my children. They might hate me, but by golly, they're getting into Harvard. And it happened.
She works hard.
Yes.
She works hard to make everything perfect and the perfect home and social experience for Richard. You know, and she works hard at that. It's her full-time job.
Absolutely. Appearances are everything. And you know, they're a powerful couple. They are mm-hmm. a power couple. And they have extraordinary wealth. And that mm-hmm. just didn't happen. That happened over generations.
And Lorelai hates it. Lorelai hates it mm-hmm. so much.
Well, yeah. So the only explanation for Emily is there must be something wrong with her. So she's a lost cause, but... Right? Rory isn't. I mean, who gets pregnant at 16 and has the baby when they come from that?
Not a Gilmore.
Not
you know
a
what
Gilmore.
I mean? Like, not a Gilmore. Right. And it happened to them.
And it also led me to wonder about the origin of the name Gilmore, where it comes from. And it's Scottish. And it's also Irish. And it's and it's from Ulster as well. But it's a Scottish Highlander. And you wonder... You know, Scots are the smallest people in the UK. They average about 5'8", 5'9". But why is Richard so tall? He's a Gilmore. Why? Why? He's 6'4". I mean, he's a giant. So then I went back and read a little history on the region, and Norwegian Vikings invaded Scotland in 739. And that was it wasn't until 1266 or something that... they got beaten back and the Scots held firm. And there are a lot of details to go into this that I'm skipping over. But it wasn't really until 1407, 1408 when they got their lands back, when the Scots really got their lands back because somebody forgot to make a payment.
Richard does seem more like a Viking.
But yes, so there's that DNA. So I'm thinking, okay, so that DNA guy is in Lorelai. She's fighting mad. So there's this sort of push-pull thing within her to fight against it. She is one, you know, there's an identity crisis there. But I think Emily comes from really tough stock.
Yes.
And she doesn't, and she's seen how people destroy themselves. And when she sees that Lorelai antagonizes every single line of her, every time she's trying to help Rory at that dinner table, you know, Lorelai's got a comment. It's this negative comment. I mean, in the real world, a grandmother would stand up and say, leave right now. Shut up or leave. Stop, you know, stop tittering away over there because I'm trying to help your daughter. I mean, that would lead to a big fight. It wouldn't. I mean, the amount of patience that Emily is displaying at that dinner table and throughout the episode is kind of extraordinary.
It's so interesting you see it that way, because I felt Emily did a lot of things wrong in this episode with good intentions, but she really crosses the line, inviting all the kids to the party, throwing this party that Rory doesn't want or like.
She's trying to save Rory. That's her intention. She doesn't want Lorelai to destroy Rory.
In her, right, in her perspective, she, or her opinion.
Yeah. She sees a glimmer of hope in Rory, that she responds to me. She thinks I'm funny sometimes. I can win her over. I can maybe gain a little bit of control by giving, you know, the post-it notes on the things. The lawyer's coming for the will, and you can have anything you want, the desk, the this, the that, right? In a bizarre scene. But it's like they're being very generous. That's very generous to say something like
totally.
That.
Totally. They are generous.
They are trying to save her.
Richard just keeps giving the checks for Fez. Here's another check for Fez. They're super generous. Emily wants to buy her some extravagant Mont Blanc pen when really she just wants the $5 bracelet. But Emily wants to do things Emily's way. She doesn't bend to what someone else wants until she shows up at the other party. That was cool.
Yes, but.
The pudding? She's trying. She's trying. She's just not good at it.
I think the party was, I think the party had a big impact on Emily, of course, but it was more for me. It was more about, I'm estranged from my daughter. I don't know my daughter. Maybe I need to give my daughter a little bit of a break here. Maybe she isn't a complete screw up. You know, maybe she's missing because, you know, because people that live at that level where Emily and Richard live, they don't have a great deal of freedom to let their hair down and really speak their minds.
Right.
They don't get to be themselves. I think a lot of them are that way because I think that they both come from a tradition of keeping culture, and that's a great responsibility. It's a ton of work, and it's just what people expect at that level. And it's like, well, you have to make a little bit of speech to our guests,
and
you have to say thank you because that's what a hostess does. And
that's the proper
right
way to do it. That's how you this have is, manners. That's this, what a right. good high society girl would do.
Right. Manners in general. I mean, it's what separates the elite from everybody else. It's the level of manners, but they can afford to have those kind of manners. Nobody else, but you know, and then she saw right when she came to Rory's birthday party, what regular people do, how easily they love each other.
Which party would you rather go to?
I want to go to the snooty party. I've been to so many of those other parties and they're fun, but I want to go to the snooty party. Those are hard to get into, you know.
But there's something to that, right? Yeah. There is an appeal to what Richard and Emily have and that life. And Rory, and we don't want to give too much away, but we know that she's intrigued by that life and she's drawn to that life, which we'll see over the next few years. She likes that.
And then, yes, and it begs the question, was Lorelai strong or weak? Breaking away from that. She displayed strength and weakness at the same time. Is it possible to do that? I mean, what did she do? And she's and Rory is cleaved so close to Lorelai. She won't let her go. She wakes her up at 4:03 a.m. She gets in bed. She recites all this stuff about the night she was born, which is a very moving, touching scene. But you see that no one is getting near her kid. She's number eight, nobody. And I
how about the end of the episode, Scott?
Yeah.
Lorelai is devastated when she sees Rory with Dean. Devastated might not be the right word.
Terrified.
But she is.
It's new territory for her. Yeah. She's a little terrified.
Yeah. That gave me chills. Even when you just said that, it's like, is she worried she's losing Rory, or is she worried that Rory could become Lorelai and what happened to Lorelai?
Interesting. Yeah.
The acting is brilliant because even now, as I'm thinking about it, I have like chills because I can see her face perfectly, and it expressed so much. You're like, oh,
it's right. It's the Babette line. What are you going to do when she leaves? When she goes to college, what are you going to have? What's she going to have? And that's what Emily fills in the blanks for all of those types of questions. What you have is friends. You have activities, you have fundraisers, you have, you know, you want to raise money for the ballet. You want to raise money for the orchestra. You want to raise money for this or that, right? You are keeping culture. That's what they do. They raise money to keep culture, to keep it alive, to keep it high quality, to get the great conductor to come visit, to be in house, or to get the top violinists, the top dancers, you know, this kind of thing. That's what they do. They spend a great deal of their time doing that.
Now that I think about it, they need to win over Rory to keep the line, the tradition going, because Lorelai went sideways. So she's not going to be the heir that they want to carry this on.
Great point. The bloodline is the blood thinned out. It's breaking. Lorelai considers it breaking the neurotic chain. The Gilmores think it's like, you know, that's the end of us. That's the end of our bloodline. And we have they're fighting for the soul of Rory so that she comes back to them or their way of life. It's fascinating. You know, look, any great drama needs a good bad guy. And, you know, there's a couple of them in Gilmore. I mean, Emily could be considered a bad guy. What a great antagonist, right? Sometimes a Lorelai could be considered a bad guy.
Right. It's not level. Richard. It's not Richard.
No, it's not Richard.
Richard is so kind. Yes. And he just loves all of them. He loves all of them and is trying to sort of keep the peace.
Yeah. You know, those scenes with, and especially when they arrive at the party. They're still tense. I mean, they just spent a day shopping and kind of connecting a little bit, Emily and Lorelai, and she was surprised by it. And she comes in, it's like, that dress, you know, did you make your daughter a hat out of it? I mean, like, what's going on? And I mean, it's like, then now we're back to normal. We're back to mother-daughter hating each other, and I just don't approve of you, and you're inappropriate, and get out of my face.
And the party, despite your desire to go, is so anti-Lorelai.
Yeah.
But we don't, I think Rory, there are things she likes about it. You know, she has her blow up, but like you're saying, it is a fancy affair.
I mean, what do you think she spent on that thing?
$100,000.
Really? Well, that's a lot of servants you got to pay. That's some great
the
food.
Flowers, the food, the all the detail. I'm sure there's valet parking out there. Right.
Yeah.
The embossed invitations. Right. Isn't that what it's called?
I don't know if it was $100,000, but she plunked down some dough.
$75,000. That's expensive.
Yeah, it is to put on an affair like that. That's no joke.
And all their friends are there. That's the thing too. She uses this as her way to not just have the kids from school, but all their friends and look at us and look at Rory. And she goes to Chilton with all these kids, and Richard knows Tristan's grandfather. Of course he does.
But I think, but also, you know, another thought popped in my mind when I'm watching it is they are making these people so abhorrent. That, you know, you say to yourself, no wonder Lorelai didn't want anything to do with it. Because they're
that woman that comes up to Lorelai.
Oh, that was the best scene of the whole season so far. Mitzi? That was genius.
So bad.
That was genius. Who was that
Sticks
actress?
Sticks her foot in her mouth.
Oh, no, no, but how great was it? I'm trying to grow. With snapping the fingers. Like, where's the servant? You know, I've been working on myself a lot, Laurel. You know, and I'm since my divorce, and I'm trying to grow.
Oh,
was fantastic.
And she's bringing up Christopher. And like, good for us, because we get to learn more
does
about
that
Christopher.
Kill you, Lorelai?
Who does that? You're like, let me put a dagger in your heart and bring up your ex, baby daddy.
That was absolutely my favorite scene of the whole episodes so far. I watched it snapping 20 times. I kept replaying it. I said, this girl's brilliant. This is just the best moment of the whole thing. But the two of them together, I mean, that was a masterclass in comedy acting, because it was just so subtle and nuanced. It was so great.
I mean, I know we're going backwards, but the sticky noting, the furniture they want when Richard and Emily pass on.
Right.
Oh my God.
But you would only hope that it would be so organized, right?
And
so predetermined. Because Bridget, you know what these things do to families. If people aren't detailed about it, you know, it breaks families apart. And they want to make sure that she's going to get what they want to give her.
Love and it. To what answer your say? Question, Bridget White played Mitzi.
Oh,
Mitzi.
That was fantastic.
Could anything be better than Mitzi?
Yeah, I mean, did she have a recurring role?
I think we only see her that time.
Oh, wow. That girl needed to get her own series, or she at least needed to have a recurring role on the show, because it was the funniest scene.
And you have to assume that she was written in for a reason,
yeah,
to show why Lorelai
ran away.
This crap exactly. So much.
Exactly. That's what the character's purpose served. Exactly. Tristan's character serving that purpose as well. So is Liza Wheels. So is Paris. That's like,
talk about Paris this, because there's some juicy Paris stuff in this episode.
Yeah, there's juicy stuff. But it's, you know, it's a world unto itself. It's a world few people really know. And it is, it's, I mean, I don't know how accurate it is portraying it that way, but I'm sure it's not inaccurate at times. Let's just put it that way.
I think there's a lot of accuracy in it.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're going to take a little break. We'll be back after these messages.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor,
as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, we're back. I'm Scott Patterson. I am All In Podcast. We're getting into Rory's birthday parties.
This is episode 6, Rory's Birthday Parties. Air date, November 9th, 2000. Rory clashes with Emily when Emily plans a formal birthday party for her. Meanwhile, Lorelai organizes a casual get-together to celebrate.
Some people have called this one of the best episodes of the Gilmore Girls.
It's fantastic. I mean, it's shockingly good. And I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but how on earth did this show not get nominated for major awards? I mean, it's unbelievably great. Every single second of this episode and this series pretty much so far has been perfection, absolute comedic and dramatic perfection. I mean, what a balancing act. What a show. Just this one really knocked me out. So anyway, so let's get into Rory's reaction. She got a little snippy with Emily.
Oh,
there.
At the party. Oof.
Wow, she let her have it. I mean, that was both barrels. I mean, that was like an uppercut. That was like a left hook and then a right hand overhand right to the nose, knocked her out and then just left. Emily was flattened. It was just terrible. It was shocking. Shocking moment. I felt she was being a little ungrateful. I she took it. It was like the Lorelai rising up in her.
Yeah.
And speaking through her.
How would you feel? You're the 16-year-old. You just want to like have your birthday. Every kid from your school's invited that hates you, that you hate. And now your grandma wants you to make a freaking toast at this fancy affair that you're like, oh my God, no.
So there's the gap in Emily's process. Mm-hmm. Emily should have had the talk with Rory at the dinner saying, listen, I'm going to invite all of your friends. That should have been a conversation. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. But I think she just does things. I don't think she did it in any, I mean, she did it with a good heart, right? With good intentions. She wants Rory to fit in. And I don't know if Emily's even aware of the tension that Rory's having or the conflict that Rory's having at school.
She invited everybody because that's what you do.
That's what you do. It's more about
the fancy cardstock.
Right. It's like, hey, she's arrived. She's to be taken seriously. This is what kind of wealth she comes from. Don't even think about not coming.
And you make that speech, toast, whatever you want to call it, because that's what you do.
Because it's really a cannon shot over the bow of the other wealthy families that are sending their kids to Chilton's, like, hey, we're players. She's just not a girl. Rory didn't understand, Lorelai didn't understand that the Gilmores had their back by throwing that party because they're saying to the other families, don't mess with this girl anymore. She's somebody. And this
look
is
at what Paris said.
This is who her grandparents are. Don't mess with us.
Paris, that's, right? My parents made me come.
Right.
Same thing. There's no difference between Paris's parents and the Gilmore grandparents.
Right.
You make this speech because that's what you right. do. Harris, you go to this party, we're making you.
Right. And Emily and Richard providing Rory the protection, the pedigree that Lorelai can't give her. Because Laura, you know, as they, you know, Emily probably already assumed that, you know, Lorelai was being mocked at school and Rory was getting bullied. I mean, it's a no brainer for her. So it's like, throw that party, send the invitation, send a message to everybody. This is who this girl is. And you can't mess with her anymore. She's somebody. So in that world, that's like Emily declaring war on the other families and say, careful, we have nuclear weapons too. You know what I mean? So you give us your respect because you're not going to give Lorelai that respect. And therefore, our granddaughter is going to suffer because of what our daughter did when she was 16 and had a baby. Now, let's fix this. We can't fix it with our daughter, but we can fix it with our granddaughter to make sure that nobody beats her up.
I looked at it. I see what you're saying, and I think you have a great perspective. I looked at it as the Gilmores are showing off that Rory's not a scholarship kid. We are just the same as you all are. And it's kind of like flexing Rory. Like, she comes from the right pedigree.
It's a power move.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a power move. And it's meant to protect the Gilmore name.
Yeah.
It's meant to protect Rory. It's enveloping her in their loving, very powerful arms. They're flexing their muscles.
Right. I guess it's don't mess with Rory, because then ultimately you're messing with your father's insurance that Richard sells.
Yes.
It. Right.
And it's global, because he just got off the phone with China. We're having a little trouble with our. And don't mess with the Gilmores. We defeated the Vikings. We absorbed their DNA, which is why I'm so tall. We will mess you up.
Now, what I have a few questions for you, Scott. One is, I'm going backwards again, but what was your opinion on the pudding?
I mean, it's a great line. It's one of the great lines. It inspired one of the great lines. It's like tantamount to hospital food after major surgery. She's such a snob. I mean, I'm really kind of digging Emily. I really like her.
I know. I love her.
I really like her.
Like, what was the pudding? Was the pudding?
You know, because Lorelai likes it. She can't understand why, but she likes it.
Like, was Emily doing it to say, I'm serving pudding in fancy bowls because you all like pudding and I am trying?
It's a concession. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a concession. Why would you want him to keep coming back without giving you so much crap all the time? Maybe Lorelai will shut up for 5 minutes and start getting grateful a little bit. But it's like everything this woman comes out of her mouth, you know, there's Lorelai saying, really, mom, is that really the smart? You know, it's like she's like a nut.
It's so interesting to me.
Out of control.
Because you hate Max Medina so much, but you are always siding with Emily when Emily is tough on your girl.
You know why? I'll tell you why. Let me make a little confession right here on the air. I did not like the way she talked to me when she came into the diner. She said, dance for me, burger boy. And then he came up to the table. And this is after he made balloons in the table and Ferrari and all that kind of stuff. And all he got was, oh, Luke, you old softy. You know, they don't respect Luke. I felt that they did not really respect him when they were sort of playing around with him. Oh, the eighth grade birthday party and the cops came. Oh, it was really something, Luke. I mean, they didn't respect him enough to talk to him in plain English the way he wants to talk to him, you know, the way, because he doesn't do all that banter. He doesn't do the banter back and forth. He doesn't do that stuff. He's not a sophisticated guy, but he's not, it's not that he doesn't read. He reads, right. He knows things, but he's just not, you know, Mr. Chit-Chatty. Life is, it's funny, and let's just create funny lines and go to the country club and this. It's this country club attitude where nobody takes anything seriously. We see the same attitude in the way we were. It's like, is everything a joke to you people? It's like, you know.
Right, like, so you're like, experiencing what Emily experiences.
Yeah, a little bit.
Although,
and he walked away. He even said, you know, I'm not listening to this anymore. And he walked away because he knew that they were talking at him. You know,
there's such a push-pull with Luke and Lorelai, where it's such a fine line because she does that ribbing to him and you do that to her, but then you're getting a little butthurt by it.
Yeah, I'm not good at it. Yeah. I go too hard with it. You know what I mean? Because I'm because I'm like, I know I'm out of my league with this girl. I'm out of my depth.
Although not when you showed up at the party, because in that scene at the party at Lorelai's, number one, you had the ice, which was epic. You're like, you know, you should always bring ice. Mm-hmm. Number two, you threw her off her game with the, will you marry me? Whoa. So it's almost like after the diner scene, you came back and you owned that scene.
Yeah, the marry me line, huh? Will you marry me?
And then Emily sees you two like each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, Emily immediately says, what is going on with you and the Iceman? It's like she saw it before either of you were really ready to even acknowledge it.
Well, there's something about Christopher. I mean, let's compare Christopher to Luke. Okay. So there's something about Christopher, his rebellious nature, him, you know, knocking Lorelai up when they were both 16 and juniors in high school. And, you know, he went off. I mean, his life was altered as well. Now, educate me here. I apologize, but Christopher is of that ilk, isn't he?
Yes.
He is.
Yes. And I was always surprised,
right.
And we're getting ahead of ourselves,
right.
By how much the Gilmores like him.
Right. He's the right.
Like they forgave him.
Yeah.
They wanted Lorelai to marry him.
Yeah. Well,
Richard would have given him a job.
It was the next, it was the only thing to do to cover the mistake. I mean, it was still going to be, it was still going to be a black mark against the family name, right? And for sure for Lorelai, but I mean, they could cover up that mistake in a matter of years. You know, Chris goes to college. He'll go to Yale. He'll go to Harvard. Richard will pull some strings. He'll end up being a VP at the insurance company, and you know, everybody will forget about it. And if anybody talks about it, Richard will and Emily will crush them. So they lost control. Yeah.
Christopher should have married Lorelai because it's what you do.
That's what
again.
You do.
Yeah. And the reason I'm team Lorelai is because I love that she does what she wants. Mm-hmm. She doesn't conform to any of it other than what she wants. And she didn't want Christopher to marry her because that would have been ruining Christopher's life.
He wasn't. No, give me a break. He wasn't rebellious enough. She wanted Marlon Brando. She wanted to go off, way off. I mean, she just wanted to go find a guy who was going to rock her world. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't Christopher.
I think she's saying, I'm not, this happened.
She
this
needed, happened. Lorelai needed a blue collar guy. That's what she needed. That's what she wanted. That's what she wanted when she, to get away from that world. I've seen it a million times. I've seen it a million times. There's a whole a population of kids that comes from these great families and they end up in New York City or in LA living in hovels and denying where they're from,
right.
and not wanting to associate. And they have a different experience.
We know how this thing ends. So ultimately I can't argue with you because I know you're right, but surely along the way, we're going to see it. And we're starting with Max Medina, but you know, she definitely is attracted to Jason, and I don't want to, you know, get ahead, but everyone listening has probably already seen it too. And Christopher, like there is something she likes about her old life or her upbringing, but she rebels against it.
She can't go back. She'll never go back. She cannot go back. There's just too much water under the bridge with her mother. It's just too, she can't. I mean, who knows? And maybe we'll find out this as I watch the episode, but who knows when she made that decision in her life? And she probably made it the night she was with Christopher, or well before. Maybe she was trying to get pregnant, so she had an excuse to get the hell out of there.
Christopher's doing the same thing. He's always rebelling against traditional.
Can you imagine what Emily was like 15, 16, 17 years ago, 18, 20 years ago? I mean, before Lorelai had the baby, can you imagine how intense she was growing up?
Imagine Emily with the cotillion or the debutante ball
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, talk about overbearing. Mm. I mean, she's intense now and she's a grandmother. Imagine what she was like as a young mother.
I feel like you're not giving me enough about that scene in the entryway to Lorelai's. With the ice, with the will you marry me, with the can you remember anything about that? I mean, that scene is so epic.
The will you marry me scene?
Yes, because we see.
I think it's just basic foreshadowing. I think it's just really basic foreshadowing. I think it's a line that was written to prepare an audience to open up possibilities, not that it necessarily was going to go there. But I think it was something, it was like an injection into the audience's bloodstream. Okay.
I think
like Luke's in play, maybe.
Yes.
Right.
And I think as a fan or a viewer, I liked Luke so much. I liked him from the very start. And so this is always giving me that hope or that moving it forward, like, I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong when I'm sitting at home going, Luke's the guy.
Right.
And then for Emily to see it too, it's so vindicating for the fan. You're like, I knew it.
It's very clever. It helps the audience to participate in the drama as opposed to just watching it. It's a whole different style of writing.
Especially coming off of the Big Max episode. Uh-huh. It's like we put a pause on that completely. And all of a sudden we're like, I knew it. I knew she likes Luke. I knew it.
But the thing is, if you give the audience what they want right away, they don't want that. They want to be tortured. They were tortured
and
for 4 years.
And you did it. You're like, will you marry me? It's like, what? You just nailed it. And then Emily just being priceless, like, who's the guy with the ice? And why is he looking at you? And you're about to give him a lap dance. And it's just like,
but when she invited him to the party, he was pleased. He doesn't smile a lot, and he smirked a little like, wow, I got invited. That was a big deal for him because I remember how I played it. It's like, okay, be really happy, but cover, let a little smile out. That's exciting for him. He gets to be invited because not a lot of people are inviting him anywhere. He's going to town hall meetings because everybody goes, but it's like, is he being invited to a lot of places? He's, you know, he's grumpy Luke.
And just the ice. I mean, the fact that she was getting in the car to go get the ice, and here comes Luke with the ice. Right. It's like, that was so major. It's like, he knows what she needs.
Right. Whereas in the world she comes from, they shove it down your throat and they tell you what you need. Here in this world, there are actual feeling beings who maybe really care about who I am and they will give me what I need. The little things, which are so important, right?
We haven't even talked about yet the party at Lorelai's. It really sums up Stars Hollow and that these people have all known each other and they know Rory since she was born. And this is a family. And that's why Emily is sitting in that wing chair to the side going,
just blown away.
I missed all of this.
Yes.
And these people are her people.
Right. She felt powerless. And she put down her sword a little bit.
Yes.
She just kind of like a zombie walked upstairs to just look at her room. She was Columboing the whole thing. So she went upstairs, saw the broken leg photo. I didn't know you had a broken leg. Well, if I had something really serious, you would have known, but it was just a broken leg. And it was just like, wow.
There's so much. And Rory gets Richard. Rory gets Richard so well. She's like, here's the Cosmo magazine, do the quiz. Right. Are you a winter or a fall? Right. It's like she gets him and he likes her so much.
Yes.
They are.
And he says, I loved his reaction. Well, Rory, I discovered that I am an autumn.
I mean, they're so cool. They're so cool together.
No, they really, it's a great dynamic with those two.
It's the best.
There's nothing for her not to love about her grandparents, except that, you know, and I think she kind of stays out of the tit for tat bickering between the two of them at the dinner table or ever. But it's just, I think she's, you know, she really loves her grandma. She wants to love her grandparents, and she loves Richard. She loves Emily, but she really wants her.
I think she's starting to learn that they have loyalty to Rory.
Mm-hmm.
They have her back,
mm-hmm.
which, as we all know, as we go on, mm-hmm. we will see that more and more.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing the important beginnings of that.
Right. Yeah. And I want to go back to, there was a scene in the diner where Rory comes up with Lane and I'm,
oh, the balloons. Could you die? This is adorable.
So I'm in a foul mood, right? Again, I'm in a foul mood. And I'm thinking, Jesus, this guy's in a foul mood. And he kind of snippy at Rory. And, well, the stupid balloons I had to blow up and then go over and sit over. Yeah, get out of here. You know what he was pissed about? It was, again, this the wealth gap. It's like, mm-hmm. you and your mom are from this world. I'm trying to overcome that. I'm trying to give you the benefit of the doubt. I love you guys. I love you, Lorelai. I love you, Rory. I want to be a part of that. I want to help raise you. I want to help, and I have helped raise you, but I mm-hmm. want to be, you know, I want to make a family with you guys. And you play with me and you mock me at the table and you don't talk to me with respect. And yet here I am delivering ice and doing this and blowing up balloons and making you cake. And yet you won't even talk to me like I'm a real person when I'm serving you food.
That really got your goat.
That was the next morning. And he was just like, you know, yeah, you know, I'm.
I felt like they just have that sort of snarky pitter patter back and forth. But because you are Luke, ultimately, like, you feel what Luke feels, you look at it in such a different way, where I really am watching always from Lorelai's perspective.
Why is Luke always grumpy? Answer the question. Why is he grumpy? He's grumpy because he's in love with a woman that he can't get, who doesn't really respect him, who, and I've been in this situation where somebody said to me, I can't take you seriously at one point in my life before I became successful. I can't take you seriously. You don't even make $50,000 a year.
Oh.
Yeah, I've heard that. And that's kind of how he feels. It's like, she'll never take me seriously. The daughter doesn't take me seriously. And I'm grumpy because I'm never going to get this woman, because she's going to date a million guys. And now she's with this Max guy. And every time he resolves it in his own mind, just to sort of, all right, screw it, accept it. You know,
it's
maybe
such
meet
an
somebody
important
else.
Point you're making, yeah. that I just had this like Oprah aha moment, because here I am looking at it 6 episodes. He's only liked her for 6 episodes.
No.
But I'm so wrong that I was looking at it like that. He's liked her for a decade.
16 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so 4 seasons in, he finally kisses her. They're finally, you know, it finally happens. That's 20 years he's been sitting there. 20 years in love with that woman.
Yeah. Wow.
And not feeling worthy and being, you know, knowing that the gap in class and wealth and is keeping them apart. Because he's terrified of her. He's terrified of her.
I literally just realized, because when you first said it in this conversation, you're like, why do you think he's grumpy? It's because he's in love with her. I was like, oh, Scott's being so like dramatic. And now I'm like, oh my God, you've loved her since she moved to Stars Hollow.
Why yell at Suki with so much ferocity for being behind the counter and then getting in Lorelai's face and say, next time you bring her in here, put her on a chain. It's like F you to where you come from. F Max Medina, F your conversations that I can overhear. You don't even have enough respect for me not to talk about this stuff when I'm serving you and I've been in love with you for, you know,
God,
16
I can't
years.
I believe I sort of just didn't.
It's amazing the guy didn't explode before season two. Yes. Spontaneously combust.
Frankly,
with
true.
All his issues.
Oh my God. I need to ask you about this, because I do think Paris and Rory had a bit of a breakthrough when Paris said, nice party. you don't like Tristan, do you? Like that? Or do you like Tristan? That was pretty major. And the ice is like, speaking of ice, Iceman, the ice between them is thawing a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's really, you know, Paris is beginning to realize that this rival could win. Mm-hmm. And she is winning. Mm-hmm. She's better looking. She's a very attractive young girl. She's as smart, if not smarter. She appears to harbor no resentment against anyone. She's a very pleasant, pleasing, open personality. She's a vulnerable person. She's not like me. So she's better than me. Paris knows that Rory is a better version of a human being.
Well, yeah, and
than she
thinks
is.
She's seeing that Tristan's paying attention to mm-hmm. Rory, and Paris likes Tristan. So why better to keep your friends close and your enemies closer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's like, I better get close to this girl so right. I can stop her from right. liking the dude I like.
Another manipulator over there at Chilton. It's like, Jesus. It's
also, like, I mean, of course, Paris, who you'd expect to be smarter, falls for Tristan. It's like, oh, God. Tristan.
How does anybody fall for that? It's like, Jesus.
I mean, what an episode.
You know you like me, Mary. Stop fighting it. You know we're going to go out. You know you're going to love it. It's like, wow. It's like, really? I mean.
Oh, my God. And we forgot another major thing.
What?
The freaking bracelet. It's the first appearance of the bracelet.
Oh, that was
the bracelet.
The bracelet. That's one of the best lines in the whole thing. Isn't this something that you would buy at a car wash? You want me to get her something that you would find at a car wash?
Not that bracelet. Wait, that bracelet. I forgot there's two bracelets.
No, she bought the bracelet. What are you talking? Oh, you mean
Dean's bracelet.
Oh, no. I thought you were talking about Rory's bracelet.
I know. I messed up. You're right.
It is.
You're right. Rory's bracelet.
There's
two bracelets. Yeah. I didn't even realize.
The double.
Right. That looks like something you'd buy at a car
wash.
Was
that a quarter? Did he drill a hole in a quarter?
What did he say? He said he found the.
It was a coin.
It was a 20. It was 25 cents.
Not a quarter. It could have been like a.
What was it?
Susan B. Anthony dollar. But no. It wasn't. It's like a.
It wasn't. It was a quarter.
Did anyone see the clown pillow? I didn't see it.
Didn't
even though
see
we were all
it. I did look
house.
For it. I did. I'm trained to look for it, and I didn't see it. But anyway, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how you make a better episode than that. I really don't. All right, we're gonna take a break. We'll be right back.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent, telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, we're back. Scott Patterson here. I am all in podcast, iHeartRadio. Riley, where are we going?
Let's go to pop culture.
Let's do it.
Emily says, my daughter, Henny Youngman.
Yeah. Is that because Take My Wife?
This is, my wife came to me and said, I want to go someplace I've never been. So I gave her directions to the kitchen. You're a great audience, everybody. You're a lovely audience. The king of the one-liners. He would stand up there for hours. Well, I think he would stand up there for an hour and just do one-liners. And people would just fall over. They'd fall over their tables. They'd laugh so hard. The guy's hysterical.
Rory says, you couldn't get her to cave? Lorelai says, no, but she agreed to make a string quartet of Like a Virgin.
Well, Madonna.
Madonna.
Lorelai says, not really. The government will close that day. Flags will fly, have a hat and mask. Barbara Streisand will give her final concert again.
Right, which I think Barbara Streisand is still giving her final performance.
She's still prepping.
20 years later. Like, I love Babs. But
yeah, but what a singer, right?
Oh.
What a singer.
And I really love that she really made it work with James Brolin. I never thought that would last. And look at it go.
I had dinner with him one night.
He's kind of cool, right?
He's kind of cool. He's a cool guy. But I mean, it was at a party. But it was a dinner party, and he was there.
Was it a snooty affair, or was it more like a party at Lorelai?
I think they were trying to have a snooty affair.
A snooty affair.
Yeah, it was in Beverly Hills, but it was, but he was a cool guy. He was yeah. Really a cool guy. He was very, very appealing.
He scored with Babs. I mean, way to go.
She continues. However, Elvis and Jim Morrison are coming in their brain chips.
Well, everybody knows Elvis and. And Jim Morrison, for those of you who don't know who Jim Morrison is, he's the lead singer of The Doors, you know,
yeah.
L.A. Woman and many other monster hits of the 60s and late 60s and early 70s. And
yeah, the Val Kilmer movie
He exposed himself to a crowd in Miami, was arrested and then charged, and then he fled the country and moved to Paris with his girlfriend.
Excellent.
And,
Jim Morrison knowledge. Son Patterson.
He was a film student at UCLA, and that's how he met Ray Manzarek, the keyboard player, and they formed their little band.
Come on, baby, light my fire.
Yeah.
Suki says, it's too bad you couldn't get your mom to relinquish Friday. And Lorelai says, no, she has her Vulcan grip on that one.
Star Trek.
Vulcan.
Spock. Leonard Nimoy.
Vulcan.
Yeah, that's Vulcan death grip.
Leonard Nimoy, and then we've had all the reincarnations with the movie, the Vulcan grip. I mean,
you just come up and touch the shoulder. You just go like that, yeah. And the person's like, boom, they go right to sleep. The Vulcan death grip.
Riley, do yourself a favor and watch Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
I know the hand signal Star Trek.
Yeah.
Just apparently not the
These Vulcans, the man, they have some special, they're special people. If they're half people.
Lorelai says, Lucy, I'm home.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, that was great.
Ricky Ricardo.
Yep.
I love Lucy. Famous TV show.
Lorelai says, and Justin is just so dreamy. He can't marry Brittany. I'll just cry, cry, and cry.
That was a good Timberlake, Spears, and still going today. It's like no one has forgotten Timberlake and Spears. Their matching denim will last forever.
You know, I got a message in 2003. I got a message on my answering machine from Britney Spears.
Are you serious?
Yes.
What did she say?
She just, I thought it was her. I never called back. I thought it was a joke. So I don't know if there's any way to confirm.
Do you
this.
Save the message on no, a cassette tape somewhere?
No. I just thought it was, you know, because I, you know, my buddies back home, they play a lot of jokes on me, man. Like phone jokes and stuff like that. They get me wound up.
Like she was a fan of Gilmore?
I don't know.
She just was calling you?
I don't know if it was her. It probably wasn't her. I mean, the chances that it was her. I mean, why would somebody that young be calling somebody in their early 40s?
Because maybe she just loved Gilmore.
Maybe, yeah.
She said it was a pleasure encountering you, Scott.
I never encountered her. I never met her.
Is that a line from the show?
Yes. That was Max Medina's line.
That's Max Medina's.
Oh, that was God. Max Medina's line.
God. Yeah. Oh, my God. That was a great, great one, Riley.
That was a nice one.
Lorelai says, you're shopping for your imaginary granddaughter, Barbara Hutton.
Yeah.
She's a popular socialite
she's,
from the early 1900s.
Yeah. There were certain, you know, Life magazine and Look magazine used to do profiles of New York socialites, and she was one of the more popular ones. There were several.
Rory says, I wonder if the Waltons ever did this while they were laying in bed.
Good night, John boy. Good night, Mom. Good night, Dad. The Waltons was the show of the 70s, by the way.
Emily says, well, what do you think? And Lorelai says, I think Edith Wharton would have been proud and busy taking notes. Edith Wharton is an American novelist. She was best known for The Age of Innocence.
You have to be smart AF to know everything in this show.
Capital AF.
Yes. Like, you got to know a lot of stuff.
Rory says, what are you drinking? Lorelai says, a Shirley Temple Black. I got your good ship lollipop right here.
That was a good line.
Very good, yeah.
Shirley Temple Black, that's when she was...
She married. Her name was,
yeah, that was her married name.
So a Shirley Temple with alcohol is a Shirley
Temple. Shirley Temple, for those of you who do not know, was a child sensation. Child star, singing, dancing, cutest thing in the world. She sang the Good Ship Lollipop. It was the number one hit song in the country for years and years and years. And
did you know who she was, Riley?
I did. The animal crackers.
Seems like everyone must know Shirley Temple. Everybody maybe because of the Temple. Drink.
Lorelai says, next year it's McDonald's with a slide.
Which is a great party.
Lorelai says, that was a pretty Freaky Friday moment.
I don't know that film. I know,
what?
I know, Freaky Friday? I don't know.
It's a switch. So what, was she referring to some sort of mother-daughter switch?
After, you know, the blow up that Rory had.
Oh, right. Because she became, so, oh my God, Scott, what are you talking about? You don't know Freaky Friday with Jodie Foster? It's like from the 70s.
Why are you yelling at me? I'm very sensitive. You're yelling at
this
me.
This is a classic.
All right, I'll watch it.
Good. It's from 1976.
Okay, so, all right. I was in high school, but I just, you know, the title alone kept me away from it. Freaky Friday. It's like, what is that title?
Oh my God. That's why they made the reference to it in Gilmore Girls, because it's so well known that a Freaky Friday is a mom-daughter body switch.
No, we weren't watching those movies back then. We were watching Jaws and Star Wars and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
For the next episode, I need to know if Riley enjoyed Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, and I need to know if you enjoyed the original Jodie Foster Freaky Friday.
We'll compare notes, Scott.
Yeah. All right, guys, now we're at the point of the podcast where everybody's been waiting for. This is the only reason we're doing the show, is we want to talk about what our favorite lines are. So this is, we're going to call this, what do we call it? We'll just call it best lines from the show. Go ahead, let's start.
I mean, mine is, you smiled. You're pleased that the Iceman looked at you like a porterhouse steak. I mean, are you kidding me? Emily nails it. And this is, I mean, we're just seeing Luke and Lorelai admitting, like, starting to have their love.
I'll follow up with a second Emily line. Doesn't it look like something you can get at a car wash?
Yeah. Oh, great no. line.
It's only $12. Great. $12 is not a present.
Great line.
And I have a Lorelai line. It's not official until you're huddled in a corner eating your hair.
Great line. Great line. Okay, so I have a couple. The when I laughed out loud and just bellowed was when Michelle came in and said, "Please to Jackson, please no, I want to stay ignorant. You know, I don't want to know why your arms are up above your head." It's like, I love that guy, man. He just, you know, he just settles their wagon. A couple of lines, I just laugh out loud. And then the other line where I just freaked out was Mitzi with the snapping of the fingers. Oh. Said, growing. I'm growth. I want to grow. No, she snapped first. I've been wanting to grow. I mean, it was just like perfect. That was perfect. So laughed out loud. There you go.
And a little breaking news before we go. How about what? Your nephew is going to be on Maisel. Milo, we've got pictures. So some pictures have been released from, I think it's season 4 that they're shooting right now of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And there's our guy. And it looks to me like Milo's character is having a thing with Rachel Brosnahan, with Mrs. Maisel.
But he's, I don't know that he's going to be too involved with that show because he's got his own show. I mean, he doesn't
True, but I think he's doing multiple episodes.
Oh, really?
I mean, because he's not shooting This Is Us right now. It's summer hiatus, so he's doing Maisel.
There's only one more season of This Is Us.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so. he's, I know him. He's not going to. I don't think, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't know that he's going to want a production schedule all summer.
He needs Google to go away. He's shooting Maisel and his hair is waft. Take a look.
No, I saw it. I saw it. And
he looks so good.
But it's, you know, he's going to need a break. You know, you can't just do that for a solid year without a break.
Oh my God. You are now Uncle Luke. Like, you just cannot surrender who you are. Because now you're worried about Milo's.
But it's like the kid needs a break. He needs a break.
The kid.
These schedules are tough, you know? He can't just go. He's not like a machine. He's not a robot. You can't just like, oh, well, his show ended. He doesn't get to have a hiatus, so let's send him to New York and wind him up and let him go on Maisel. And then after he's done there, you know, he can have a day off and he can go back.
He's 43 now.
Doesn't matter.
Look, Uncle Luke, he's 43.
Yeah.
He wants to do 2 shows. He can do it.
I don't think he's going to want to do it. I think he'll do an episode here and there. All right, everybody. That's pretty much it. Next week, we're gonna break down episode 7, season 1, Kiss and Tell. Oh, boy. What's that going to be about? We'll find out. Fasten your seatbelts. It could be a Max Medina situation again. I have a feeling this gentleman, this friend of mine, this lovely man, Scott Cohen, is going to be driving me a little batty in the not too distant future. It's not funny. Amy, it's not funny. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram at @IAmAllInPodcast and email us at Gilmore@iHeartRadio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.
Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.